is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the official UK Seahawkers podcast. This week, myself, Stuart Court, is, as ever, joined by a man getting used to scoring goals from crosses, as per his social media feed this week, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Good evening.
So yeah, goals from crosses. It's a new found fad.
What a joy. What a joy.
Yeah. Well, is it Harry Kane's got 7,000 goals this season, though?
Yeah, and more to come. Just keep putting the ball on the man's head, and thank you very much. We can all go home happy.
So, yeah, this week we will look back on last Sunday's win in Philadelphia. I've spent the last 4 or 5 days trying to think up Always Sunny in Philadelphia pun, and as I speak, failing miserably as per always. And then we'll look ahead to this week's game. Back home in Seattle, Monday Night Football, and all the joys that will surely bring against the Minnesota Vikings. But Adam, on Sunday against the Eagles, it means 17-9 is the final score, is what the scoreboard reads, what will go down in the forever history books. But it felt like, for most of it, that the scoreboard was a lot heavier tilted in our favour, but also it just kind of had that feeling where the game was won after about the third or fourth time we saw Carson Wentz and that offense on the field, didn't it?
Yeah, it was never really stressful. And, like, it was a three-hour game, but it felt like it was about 5.5 hours long, just with the number of turn of possessions and punts. And it just felt like it was going on forever and ever, like, and we could never get away. And then the penny obviously drops the hammer with that run, which was awesome. And that really got me out of my seat. It was really fun to watch. And, yeah, like, that kind of got close to putting a shine on what was could have been a more dominant performance on the scoreline. But yeah, I mean, I never really felt under any pressure once we scored the first touchdown, really, that we weren't going to win.
Yeah, it's like I said, I think they threw it 40 odd times on Sunday, the Eagles, and it was one of those things like you're banging your head against, you know, through 33-45 when it's finished. Like, after about 20, you can kind of see, yeah, that isn't going to work, lads. It's not how you're going to win this game. You need the fast breaks and fast changes and all that kind of thing. But it was a very strange, especially for a Seahawks road game. It was very unbefitting what the kind of storyline thread around the team on the road has been, somewhat unjustly, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was still funny that it still came down to, like, having to corral an onside kick when, like, you've been so dominant for the whole game. But it looked like Wentz is obviously getting a lot of heat and taking a lot of heat all season, and that may be right, that may be wrong, but watching him and his receivers try and link up, it was as if, well, maybe they hadn't, it was as if they'd, like, never met before. Like, no one was getting to the right spot, and there's quite a lot of post-analysis that suggests that, you know, Wentz was onto a loser before he started, given the hyenas that he was trying to throw the ball to, he just couldn't get in the right position. And look, like, sometimes when you want to have a playoff run and go deep into playoffs and try and get a first seed or whatever, like, I'm not going to apologize for a game like that. You know, in an ideal world for the Eagles, they would have performed a million times better than that, have been much better. But, you know, we got a bit of luck with injuries and whatnot, and we won, and that's all you can really ask for in a game like that. We are the ultimate team that plays up or down to the opposition, and we did exactly the same again on Sunday, but with enough quality and a couple of plays just to make the difference.
Yeah, I think, well, we spoke last week before the game talking about what their tight ends are going to do. It's only really Zach Ertz who kind of threatened to do anything, really. Obviously got the garbage time touchdown, but 12 catches, 91 yards. It's his safety blanket. He was the only one getting free, and when he was free, Wentz was finding and seeing as well, which is something that's been criticised in some corners of the media since the game on Sunday. But as for the Seahawks on the offensive side of the ball, Russell Wilson, he struggled a little bit on the Monday nighter against San Francisco, and the team obviously got out of Dodge with a win thanks to Jason Myers kicking too late in overtime eventually. On a buzzer beater in overtime is one way to win. But that kind of seemed to be he seemed to be suffering from a San Fran hangover somewhat. It wasn't his best game in very uncomfortable conditions for Russell Wilson on Sunday in the wind and a little bit of rain of Philadelphia, Adam.
Yeah, I think the conditions were a big factor. Another factor is that if DK Metcalf could catch the ball, he'd have another 100 yards and probably one or two more touchdowns. And you'd probably leave thinking that was an absolute masterclass from Wilson. So it's tricky to know what to think about that because, you know, DK's dropped one, what should be an easy touchdown for a guy of his stature and what he can do. I think there was another one as well. And, you know, DK had one of those games where you just think, you know, fucking hell, mate, like, what is going on?
I mean, the long touchdown ball he drops, his actual route to get there is incredibly impressive. He just eats up 5 yards of stride, and then obviously the most important part of it, he kind of fluffs quite handsomely, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just tracked it really poorly at the end and kind of got himself into a position where he had to really lurch forward for it when he probably could have just taken it if he wanted to.
Yeah.
So that wasn't great. And I think Wilson is performing to a ridiculous level. He's going to be unlucky in the sense that Lamar Jackson is just ridiculous right now. And, you know, you can be as big a homer as you want, but, like, it's Lamar's MVP to lose now, and I think that's absolutely correct. And my mate texted me saying, you know, is Russell Wilson going to have the best season ever by a player to not win the MVP? And it's interesting because if you think about it, we've had 11 games now, and four of them, which I would say Baltimore, New Orleans, San Fran, and Philadelphia, have probably been like average to mediocre games. You know, but the other seven has obviously been ridiculous. But I would say part of that, you know, in another season, I'm not sure. I don't know. Do you think he's been like MVP level in every season that we've seen in the NFL, or is it just kind of one of those where there's not that many people that are consistently doing it on a huge... I'm going off on a tangent here, but I'm just wondering if we're kind of in one of those seasons where there isn't exceptional play from a number of people. You know, Mahomes has been injured, and 4 weeks into the season, we were like, well, Mahomes is the, you know, MVP before you even think about it, and then Jackson comes in. I don't know, like, it was another game of Wilson that was, you know, good to solid without being extraordinary. But if he, you know, if we're winning, then that's, you know, who gives a shit about the MVP? I could not care less if he wins the MVP, just to be clear.
Well, I think I said to you a couple of weeks ago, the thing with Russell Wilson is going to say he doesn't care, and he probably doesn't care, but for someone like Russell Wilson, who's got so many outside interests and scenes, I mean, he spoke to Charlie Rose, I think it was, before he got Me Too'd, but he spoke to Charlie Rose after a Super Bowl win, and he was talking about, in all seriousness, of the things he wants to accomplish in his post-playing career. So as I said to you, the MVP for Wilson is probably nothing more than a legacy thing. It's a thing where you can look back and go, yeah, I got one of them. It's really what was Sunday, 79, 8-point win on the road. It doesn't look great. It doesn't look like a team who are going to be one that are being labeled as one of the teams to watch for a deep postseason run, but that is what it is, because it's different when you're living through it. I think that's kind of how Wilson is probably going to treat the MVP award, because obviously at the end of the day, if he wins MVP and he's not playing football the second week of January, it won't really matter. But if he wins if he doesn't win MVP and the Seahawks are in Miami in February, then it will kind of even out. It's for Wilson, it's 100% a legacy thing. He will want to win it for like the CV at the end of his career. I mean,
if you've seen the last two videos he's put out at the end of the game, they've both featured, like, over the audio, the crowd chanting MVP, and that for me feels very pointed. that like he wants to make that clear. That's what people are chanting at him. If you look at his last two Instagram videos as he's running off the field at the end of the last two games, there's like loud MVP chants in the video, which just seems like a little bit unlike him normally. But I don't know, and I emphatically don't care if he wins it or not.
Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson started the season at 75-1 to win the MVP. He's now odds-on favourite in Vegas to win the MVP. I think what he did Monday night is kind of he's the guy who ran the 2-hour marathon of whatever it was a couple of months ago. He is that far ahead of everyone else. It's going to take something ridiculous, probably from the Niners on Sunday, to slow down that charge for MVP for Lamar, because it was just so it was easy on Monday. It was bizarre how easy it was. It should not have been like that, and it kind of in a blink it was 28-3, and it was kind of like someone tweeted, Lamar Jackson's MVP because he had people watching that game deep into the third quarter just to see what he was going to do next. And that kind of is, I don't think Russell Wilson is that scheduled viewing, like must see viewing at times this season, which is, I think, that all that kind of MVP kind of comes into. But yeah, again, makes no difference to me if Wilson wins MVP. He's our quarterback, and that's more fun and more encouraging long term than him winning an end of season award, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah, but the main star, well, just looking at the box score, it's a really weird looking box score because we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have 5 receivers all get over 30 yards, and not one of them got to 40 yards. The leading receiver on Sunday was Tyler Lockett, who had 1 catch on just 2 targets for 38 yards. That kind of suggests, again, that the win kind of waylaid any consistent deep throw, deep ball game plan, didn't it?
It just seemed like the weather was just awful. It was the same against New Orleans against the Patriots last week.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what you're supposed to do in that situation, especially you know, grass turf, outdoors, wind. Yeah, it's not a great recipe. Wilson's typically been not great in the rain at home, let alone on the road. So you can understand why both quarterbacks had trouble moving the ball.
Yeah, but obviously the main guy to come out of it with, well, arguably the game winner, if you're going to tab anyone with it on Sunday, Adam, was that man Rashad Penny, who was written off. Certain people, the usual suspects, were saying that we should have given up any sort of draft pick, got any sort of draft pick from failing NFC teams for him at the trade deadline. But Rashad Penny, 14 carries, 29 yards, a 58-yard scamper for the end zone, even though he tried his hardest not to score with strange sense of direction. But he was that spark, which is one reason that this team used the first round pick on him 18 months ago, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, we said a couple of weeks ago, I think, that he had a breakaway speed that just wasn't in Carson's locker. And when he gets to the second level, he's really fucking hard to stop. You know, if you stand him up and, like, good luck getting an open field tackle on him, because, yeah, he's wide and you know, he's thick, and he just runs through people. It's great. But we've not seen it enough.
No, it just seemed like, I mean, there is obviously people, there's all the draft chat and everything. Most positions and most players, it seems, there are odd cases where they hit the ground running straight away. But it just seemed with more often than not, maybe, especially with Seahawks draft picks, where it is that second, third year, it's very rare. I mean, there's a lot of talk about season DK Metcalf's having, but as you said, with his drops, he could have had an even better one. So there's clearly a work in progress there, and it's the same with Rashad Penny. So the fact that people just write him off after one yard run or something against a middling team, it's kind of, you just kind of, well, Golden Tate was meh to average for the first couple of years of his time in Seattle. Then he's probably one of the more popular players of the last decade, Adam.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But he started off really slowly. But I mean, these are 21, 22-year-old kids, basically, who have been given an opportunity they've worked towards and all that. They've got more money than they probably ever expected to get and know what to do with. And the jump is just ridiculous. I mean, all that, every year there's a talk of, will the best college team beat the worst NFL team? And it just won't happen because there's a jump when it's your profession compared to what you're doing to try and make it profession, if that makes sense, Adam.
Yeah, and like, we only really need Penny to be good from next season onwards, really, when they're probably going to try and reduce what Carson's doing. So, you know, if they can get through, I still think they're missing a back this season, personally. I'd like to see, you know, a third guy like the Mike Davis equivalent that we had last year, which Penny's not really stepped into yet. Maybe he will do going forward for the rest of this year. And, you know, Carson, albeit on Sunday, didn't, but has had too many touches so far this year from a durability standpoint. But, yeah, like, if look, it's going to be very difficult for him to legislate the first round pick that he got. But, like, ultimately, look at the whole draft class in total. And, you know, was the draft class good? Fine. And, yeah, sure, you could have taken someone else. But, ultimately, like, the quibbling over it, like, it's happened now. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, just, there's no point moaning. You moan about him as a player in isolation. Don't moan about the pick he was taken at, because whilst it is annoying, like, it's moot at this stage. And if anything, the only good thing about it is that if he becomes a late bloomer in his third and fourth year, you've got the fifth-year option that you can pick him up at, which would be a preferable deal than paying the guy. So, you know, that's another year of control for relatively cheap. So, ultimately, it is what it is with the pick. It's happened.
Yeah, but also,
I'd be much more annoyed about LJ Collier's performances, by the way, so far than Rashad Penny with his first round pick.
Yeah, but also we've spoken to Rob State in the lead up to a couple of drafts, maybe the last three drafts, and he said it's either 10, 15 or 16 picks. After that, it's kind of a muchness. And that, I mean, what was Penny, 27?
Yeah, something like that.
So like he's a first round pick in literally label only, and he's the first he's one of the first 32. He was the second running back taken, so he wasn't picked to be the best running back of that class. He was picked to be kind of the player he's evolving into on the last few weeks. I mean, I said weeks ago that he kind of looks different this year, and it even seems he's kind of took on and changed more. And evolve more since like week two, week three. Just seemed to be a lot more confident and more in tune of what he was doing. Even like in just spanning Carson, he was carrying 25, 30 times a game. But yeah, I think the Penny pick is never going to be accepted, because you can always find a fifth round defensive end who's got two sacks or something and kind of beat that drum. But yeah, but I think Rashad Penny is a good running back. He's a good, as you say, he's good at the role and job we need him to provide at this point for this team and for this offense with what Carson's doing. Is probably still in front of him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing about him, and if I have a gripe about anything, it's the discussions about his weight last year, that he was like 15, 20 pounds overweight. I mean, how's that happened?
Yeah.
That seems a lot more alarming than anything else. Like, you know, talking about eating McDonald's, and he was on the radio today or yesterday saying that, you know, his Thanksgiving meal is going to be like diet pills, which is like good luck, like for the commitment or whatever. But how have we got to a stage where a first round pick in a professional organization is like allowed to be 15, 20 pounds overweight and no one's doing anything about it?
But was it overweight or was it heavier than he was when they drafted him?
Well, he said he was playing at, I think Pete said he was playing at 240.
235, yeah.
I mean, that's heavy for a running back. And that's not, you know, if you look at the, I think Rob Staten, you know, to name drop him again, said that, you know, the Seahawks have a size and weight range in which they normally always take a running back. And that's outside that. I mean, I think like 210, 220 was the range that, you know, most of the guys they pick and play were normally playing at.
I think it's like, was it 6 foot two? Yeah, 220, 225 is their kind of guy. But yeah, but if it's took what 22 weeks for the penny to drop, per not intended, but never mind. It's better late than never, isn't it? I mean, he's still providing more than, as you said, LJ Collier so far. Although he got his, I think he probably got his most extensive work on Sunday with no Clowney against the Eagles. But you go back every couple of years. I mean, we didn't have a first round pick for a few years, and you kind of see why. But it's gonna be debate forever more kind of thing. But with how Penny looked on Sunday, how he's looked in fits and spurts on throughout this season, for me, I think he's showing why they picked him. And I think the conversation is not going to end, but it probably should, because he looks an actual legitimate player, and it's it's going to work out in their benefit that they didn't just take any offer on the trade deadline from the Detroit Lions of the league, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, elsewhere, we spoke just briefly before we started recording, that there wasn't a lot of note coming out of Sunday, but apart from Penny, was there really? On the offensive side of the ball, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, not that it was like a big thing, but that slant to Josh Gordon worked again, which I just love seeing. I think I yelled on from my couch, "That is pure sex," after watching it. I love, in all sports, I love it when the big name does something. And yeah. His hands, you run that play, every play, and you will never have an incompletion. There's nothing you can do about it.
I mean, he caught it against Richard Sherman, and virtually no one is catching anything on Richard Sherman this year. So,
what would that get? Unless something at the minute.
No. But also, the one thing with Josh Gordon, I think Mike Dugar or maybe Chris Kidd pointed out, that is going to evolve into a slugger and go out, and they're going to have one play this season. They're going to have two of Lockett, Metcalf, and Gordon, 25, 30 yards deep, and. Oof. I mean, like we've mentioned it all season, all off season. We wanted to have a bit more fun, and the chances of that is it's a lot more than fun, isn't it, Adam? It's that phrase you blurted out from your sofa, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead to Monday, like Xavier Rhodes got absolutely marmalised by Cortland Sutton at the weekend. Yeah, exactly. So it'll be very interesting to see if something similar can happen again with that, and maybe we can drop a hammer on them with a deep ball at some point to Josh Gordon, because that would just be too exciting if that happened.
Yeah, and also this is the year going forward, looking way ahead. If we keep all of a first round pick, which is obviously up for debate until even when we're on the clock, it's up for debate, but it might be the year to use that on a wide receiver, because that class is redonkulous. Also one thing on Penny, with all the talk of the pick's a pick and don't regret it, it would have been nice if we had the boy Cortland Sutton instead, and yeah, never mind. Defensively, I don't know, it started to look a lot like Christmas for the Seahawks, isn't it?
Yeah, they're they're getting it done. And again, maybe caveat that it wasn't against the greatest offensive output you'll ever like to see. But it was just like a good, clean performance. Like Miles Sanders did nothing. And apart from 76 catches by Zach Ertz, there was just nothing.
It's like the physical side of it. It is starting to look eerily familiar. It was quotes from Bradley McDougal after the game where with Quandre Diggs alongside him, he started to feel a lot more confident. He doesn't have to work as much pre-snap, which is somewhat of a slight against players he played alongside earlier in the season. But that Quandre Diggs trade is looking more and more ridiculous, especially when you watch and see how bad to god-awful the Lions' defense looks without him back there compared to how our defense kind of looks with him back there.
Yeah, that was just a brilliant, brilliant trade, and could be the difference between making the playoffs as a one seed and maybe missing the playoffs altogether. Because I think his performance in the last few games has just been so, so important. And it was probably the first game that we had as a win on defense this week where you weren't thinking like, "Whoa, we won," but we got away with X play and Y play. I mean, there was that throw to Miles Sanders early on, which went, I think, just clipped off Saturn's 13th moon and fell back down to Earth. It was so far off. We didn't even give up many chances in that game, which was the most impressive thing.
No, and also one thing the defense did do, again, it is a weird anomaly, but it just seemed to happen. Five more turnovers forced from the Eagles. Obviously, the Seahawks give them the ball back almost immediately. And one of those, through a Chris Carson fumble, the second one in two plays after the Eagles turnover themselves. But they're getting the ball, they're punching the ball out. And, I mean, the Trey Flowers interception, Adam, he's wide open for Carson Wentz, and he kind of runs the route for the wide receiver he was tracking, didn't he? It's another impressive play, another kind of thread on the bow of Trey Flowers' continuing evolution from a college safety on a porous defense to a legitimate starting cornerback in the NFL, Adam.
Yeah, he looks so much cleaner in everything that he's doing, just smoother. We're not giving up the underneath stuff that we were giving up earlier on. You know, apart from kind of on the goal line where the 2 points that the Niners had and Ertz's touchdown seemed a little bit easy. Both of those plays, kind of very, very soft coverage. I don't really know what the plan was there.
But it's that kind of prevent, anything prevent defense prevents you from doing is winning kind of thing. It kind of, that is what that is, isn't it?
It's true, just... but you can't get hurt over the top when the ball's from 2 yards from the goal line starting
that's
off.
True. That's true.
It's only so soft you want to play when you're on the goal line.
that's true.
But yeah, that was great. And I mean, play of the game was Quinton Jefferson trying to play fly half and inside center and flipping an inside ball to Shaquin Griffin, which was just such a funny moment.
Yeah, the best play of that is, I don't know if anyone's posted your 22, but I mean, apparently according to Shaquin himself, he causes the turnover, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then just runs for the sideline. No, but then he runs for the sideline. Doesn't run all the way. Runs 5 or 10 yards towards the sideline. He's told by the whole sideline that the ball is still alive, and then runs. Obviously, as you say, gets the handoff from Quinton Jefferson, which was null and void. But it was, there was players stepping up all over the shop, and probably more encouraging. And is it harsh to say most surprising that of all those names was Shaquin Griffin just flashing off the screen when he got the pass rush opportunities, didn't he?
Well, you tell me. I mean, you saw him a lot more in college than I did, and you know, is it a surprise that, you know, I think we always thought that he was going to do something, he was going to be in kind of pin your ears back pass rush scenarios.
Yeah, but I think the surprise comes somewhat in how, I mean, he was barely seen the field on special teams for a few weeks. He was literally just dressing and just sitting next to his brother for 3.5 hours. But like that, what he did. He should really have two. He could have had one and Wentz got away out of his own end zone. And then the second one, that should be a sack. He had him in the dirt and all, in his grasp and all that, all kind of lingo and stuff. So he could have had two sacks on Sunday. But he was doing, as you say, that's how he looked against Auburn in his last college game in the Sugar Bowl, was it? That's what he did. That's how he looked. Consistently under Scott Frost in his last year and a half in college, it was a surprise to see it happen, because it kind of sort of come out of nowhere from, as I say, just twiddling thumbs for 3 hours to actually having an impact and kind of again adding another thing that this defense is going to have offenses looking at and putting things on tape, which is going to be concerning to teams' offenses game planning for us for the next 4 or 5 weeks, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, because he's got quite a unique stature for, like, I can't really work it. He almost, like, I don't know, he looks like body shape wise, like a safety more than a pass rusher, but he's got that speed. And like, I imagine there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of like for likes that you can practice against him in the league, really. Like, you'd have to run a corner and put in the practice squad, you know, in the scout team against him to try and work out to stop him.
Yeah,
he's going to get home and hit someone really hard at some point.
Yeah, he is that kind of like big nickel kind of. He's like a big nickel. He's the extra DB kind of on the field when he's on the field. But yeah, like, they put him in position to win, and he won more often than not against, or two. I mean, Andre Dillard from their first round pick this year, he only lasted a half in his first start at right tackle because Ziggy Ansah thought it was 2012 all over again. And then the second one was the one with the Vitae, Big V, as he's called in Philly. He got abused by Shaquin on a couple of plays as well. He was like, that's kind of everything, which is kind of what Pete Carroll can talk about. It's, they put their players in positions to win. We saw it with Bruce Irvin in his rookie year. He wasn't much else par a pass rusher, but he got, what, 6.5 sacks and 7 sacks in his rookie year. They beat Carroll. They just put their players in positions to win, and when they win, like Shaquin Griffin did, like Rashad Penny did, by the way, in the same draft class as well, it kind of proves everything we kind of, the frustrating side of everything with this coaching staff and the top guy at the top, it kind of is proved right somewhat, isn't it, when we have games like we did on Sunday, where the two best players are players put in positions which they haven't really been afforded thus far, Adam?
I think you've really got to go some to pick as many holes in the coaching staff as people are continuing to do now.
Like, it's
We've done it for a long time, for a year and a half. But I think maybe last year was kind of more of a sneak in to the playoff situation and then kind of get waxed because of your own philosophy against Dallas. But yeah, if you if you're trying to slag them off now, I mean, I know the analytics brigade have got their nails deep into them for fourth downs or whatever, but like, you're signed up for that. That is what it is. Yeah. Like, that's the equivalent of moaning about a first round pick. You know what it is and why. Like, that's what they're going to do. And they're 9-2 with a team that we thought were going to be like 8-8 at best. Like, this is coach of the year stuff. There's only so much you can moan about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot put on the post Atlanta 2012 playoff game. We'll have Russell Wilson said, right, next year we'll go all the way, and obviously they did. There is that kind of vibe from everything which happened over the offseason, from the minute the whistle blew to end the game in Dallas, isn't it? Obviously, they changed all not the medical staff, but all like the conditioning staff and all that. They paid Russell Wilson, and clearly he had a say with saying, look, I want to be put in a position to make plays more often than just handing the ball off to a seventh round pick. They've kind of, they dived all in on the draft. They went from, was it four picks, then traded Frank Clark, and then ended up with 15,000 picks during that weekend in Nashville. And some of them have made impact. But then you've got the deal for Clowney, which is just daylight robbery. And they go, I know what we'll do. We'll commit daylight robbery again and do this time do it in Detroit and bring in the players. Because they're not just making moves for making moves' sake. They're making moves and they've improved this team from, as you say, an 8-18, which a team is now in top four, top five of another thing, which matters very little, but power rankings. But the respect is there for this team. And really, the first week of September, we kind of didn't expect much of us, just kind of wanted to get through and have a bit of fun along the way. We're now getting through, having fun, and looking set for a busy January, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, we both thought it was empty words when they were like, oh, it reminds of 2012.
Yeah.
Like, you looked at it and you thought, really? Does it? I mean, the talent differential between then and now, you're going some to suggest that, night's going to follow day. Again with that, because it just doesn't. Yeah, I mean, I'm. It didn't look like it, but fair play to them. I mean, it's the same record as they had then, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's the third time they won nine games through this point, I think. Something, but yeah, it is. But I think. I think it was Mike Dugard we had on at the start of the season. You asked him, he goes, well, I can name two players on defense and two players on the offense. Because you kept saying all offseason that you didn't know how they filled out a nightmare roster, because it just seems like a load of made up names. But now we speak, four and a half months later, and it's a team which, with obviously recency bias of Shaquem Griffin and Rashad Penny and all the rest of it kind of fresh in the mind, it does seem a team geared for, a run, shall we say.
Yeah, I feel like the team is all of our mates again, like it was in that great run.
Yeah, and also, the one big difference, I think Brendan McDougal touched on it again, it just seems a lot more like on a single track, whereas we had all the noise, as it were, from Sherman, Bennett and all the rest of it. There kind of doesn't seem to be that undercurrent with this team, does there, at this point?
No, I mean, look, I had no problem with that noise. But you know, if it was annoying the coaches or whatever, and like, this is what they're in and that's what they chose to do, again, like, it would have been a much easier to criticise had we been 6-7, going into the last few games of the season, as opposed to what looks like, maybe 10-3, 11-2 type of thing.
Yeah, one more thing from Sunday, though. Another one from the 2018 draft class. Michael Dixon, despite having a 23-yard punt directly into the wind for his first one, he put the ball inside the 20 three times, inside the 5 twice on Sunday. And it's that in a game which is scoreboard wise tight, that was a big plus point for the Seahawks getting a win on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always the first to say, like, special teams is not as big as, you know, as the other two, as some people like to say. But in fairness, on a day like Sunday, when the opposition can't really move the ball at will, you know, even just not giving them an easy chance can be worth 3 or 4 points. And I think it was. I mean, yeah, Dixon did a heck of a job in difficult conditions. I think Ahmadi got onto both punts.
Went to one of them.
That was cool for him. And yeah, it was good. We've not even mentioned the flea flicker touchdown, which, you know, was such a cool play. Harsh on Malik Turner from us. It was a weird game to watch because it was relaxing, but you were thinking, oh, come on, one more score. And a lot of cool stuff happened and a lot of shit stuff happened. It was just, it was an odd game. Not one for the purists.
No, it's like we said with Lamar Jackson, what he did on Monday night. It's not a game which is going to be put on Russell Wilson's Hall of Fame reel, is it really? It's not going to be something that's going to be on his CV as that legacy thing. Rashad Penny, though, a few things coming out of the game. Rashad Penny is now number one among NFL running backs this season with 5.92 yards per carry, third overall, just behind Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. That flea flicker to Malik Turner had a completion probability of only 13.3%. The fifth most improbable completion, and somewhat, which is probably one string for Wilson's MVP contention, is that three of those five most improbable completions, Adam, are all Russell Wilson's. That's kind of one thing that's probably setting him apart if he's going to have a run at MVP for this last month, isn't it? Is that he's getting the ball, he's doing things he probably really shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I mean, look, the most exciting plays are always the ones that could go A and they end up being B. That they're always great fun to watch. And it's interesting to see, like, so the Pro Bowl vote came out today, and I think Wilson was third behind Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, and best win in the world, Mahomes has done the square root of hee-haw so far this season of anything particularly, you know, that resonates. So it just shows, like, how, you know, one little play, like, the jumping play that he had to Williams, his running back, a couple of weeks ago, like, it's just the optics of one or two plays happening that can change everything. And I think Wilson may need a couple of those on Monday and then against the Rams again if he wants to get really back into it. So it'll be interesting. But again, like, he's looking after the ball. He's doing exactly the job he needs to do. And ultimately, if it's not enough to win an MVP, that's fine. It's still probably going to be one of his best seasons he's had as a Seahawk, and who are we to complain when that happens?
Yeah, on Sunday, he became the first quarterback in NFL history with a winning record in his first 8 seasons. He also, if a win against the Vikings on Monday, will see him tied for the most home wins for a quarterback, as much as quarterback wins matters as much as an MVP, really, in his first 8 years as well. The 5 turnovers were the most for the Seahawks since October 2017 against the Rams. And Adam, probably the best thing to come out of Sunday is that after Sunday, the Seahawks have the 6th best passer rating allowed over the last 2 months, 81 passer rating for opposing quarterbacks, which is just behind the Patriots, Ravens, Niners, Steelers, and New Orleans. I mean, when I looked at it, pre-Niners, that's a wild thing to even think about, the Seahawks being in that kind of company in that specific stat, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more of a defensive league this year than it was last year. It's amazing how cyclical these things are. And so you're going to need to have a strong defense to put up, you know, with this and stay relevant. And that's a great stat. You know, in a passing league, to be good at defending the pass, you know, you can't really ask for a lot more than that.
No, and they're going to be tested this week. One to praise or one to mention that we haven't mentioned so far for Sunday?
Let's dip back into Malik Turner, who just a great route that he ran to get away.
It's a great sell job.
Yeah, it was brilliant. The whole play was good, apart from Chris Carson's slightly ropey pass back to Wilson, which is probably not going to go on his Hall of Fame real if he ever has one. But it was great. And, you know, those are the kind of plays that you can see a flea flicker coming kind of as soon as the handoff's made, because you just watch the quarterback drop back and like, uh-oh, here we go, something's going to happen. So yeah, that was great. And, yeah, I love watching stuff like that.
Yeah, for me, I think, we spoke about how they're kind of the ones who could be on the hot seat of all position players. But KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks, KJ Wright especially, had led the team with 12 tackles on Sunday. I think we talked about how they're going to defend the tight ends, and apart from Ertz having most of that was in garbage time in that final drive, the Eagles, obviously his touchdown was as well. I think he, again, as he always does, seems to be every week, he nailed out a screen, wiped that out before it even really got going. He's dispelling some of what I thought he was looking like over the last couple of weeks, KJ Wright, and he's, as the defense, as the unit has improved, he has been one major facet of that. It's his third straight double digit tackle game versus the Eagles as well. And he's now these three tackles on Sunday to become the third, to go up to third place on Seattle's all-time tackles list, which is ridiculous when you think, was it a month ago, Bobby Wagner became the all-time tackling machine for the Seahawks. The fact that these two play alongside each other, and then our team of the decade vote, Lofa Tatupu nearly beat him, Adam.
Yeah,
never mind, moving on. The Seahawks next play after all the Thanksgiving, the festivities have settled down on the last day after the four-day weekend for our American friends on Monday Night Football against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings.
He's got three of them already today, does Blair Walsh, from 22, 43, and 47, but all were going in the other direction. This is a 27-yard field goal attempt from the left hash mark for Blair Walsh to try to give the Vikings the lead. The snap, the kick is up.
Missed it.
No good! Are you kidding me? It's no good! Oh, baby, it's Christmas in Minnesota, and the Seahawks have dodged a bullet from 26 yards out. Matt Blair misses, Blair Walsh, I beg your pardon, misses the field goal attempt, and Seattle now with 22
seconds. As the Seahawks sit back on Sunday and watch all the chaos and carnage go down and their playoff position and playoff probability ebb and flow, which is currently on probably a peak somewhat with what the Buffalo Bills are doing at Jerry World currently as we record. But yeah, the Minnesota Vikings, Adam, this is one of the as tough as the Seahawks were to read early in the season, but they're getting 1 and 2 point wins. This Vikings team is somewhat a mirror image of it, because you never really know, especially on prime time, what you're going to get, do you?
No, I mean, Cousins winning in Dallas on prime time was one of those games that dispelled a lot of the tropes surrounding him. And that was interesting, and I think that sets Monday up really nicely. I think this is maybe, it's as close to the hardest game that we've got left, I think. It's not going to be easy at all. I got a positive feeling about it, because primetime in Seattle normally goes well. I think Pete Carroll's 18-2 on primetime in Seattle, which, you know, is pretty good going.
Nathan with the stats.
I do my research. I think that's going to be a major factor. It always has been. And you know, you just hope that the weather holds up. It's not raining or whatever. And that would be massive. But it's going to be a great game. It's impossible for this one to be a bad game, I would say.
Yeah, it's, again, I'm unsure if it's going to be one for the purists on Sunday, because that weather could turn in Seattle over the weekend. But also, this is the Vikings defense, is the defense which is as bend and don't break as any in the league. What they're giving up is like top five in the league per points. They've only given up one, I think it is, or three rushing touchdowns. They are really, they're a gnarly defense. Obviously, Mike Zimmer is kind of stuck his flag on that mass kind of thing, but as you say, there is a potential for a bit of a barnstorm, and it's all going to be ruined by who's commentating on the game, though, isn't it, Adam? Oh god, I wish we could flex Monday night games, but it does look one thing which is going to be a concern. The Seahawks are obviously going to game plan for is Adam Thielen appears to be imminent coming back after when he's missed pretty much most of the last 6 weeks, which is, in the words of Adam Nathan, a bit spursy, isn't it?
Yeah, he didn't practice yesterday, so maybe we might get away with one.
No, well, they cut Josh Doctson because he's returned.
Oh, okay.
Who's there for? That's what Zimmer or whoever spoke yesterday said. They cut him because they're pretty well set at wide receiver, which suggests that Thielen will be back. And if you want to talk about bust first round picks, go look at Josh Doctson and Laquan Treadwell. That's from the same class for the Redskins and the Vikings, and neither of them, I think, barely had a catch. I mean, Josh Doctson had one catch in Seattle a few years ago, but that was the Blair Walsh game for the Seahawks. But yeah, I mean, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, with the complete crumbling in Los Angeles, that's the best 1-2 punch the Seahawks going to face at wide receiver this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you consider how good Dalvin Cook is in the passing game, you know, the screens out to him, if he can get any open space, you know, that is dangerous. So it's going to be hard because we're going to have to be, you know, very careful vertically and horizontally. And it might be the best offense names-wise in the talent positions that we've played so far this season. Maybe?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Probably. I mean, Godwin and Evans, actually, think about it, are pretty good. OJ Howard, did he play in that game? That's probably the next one.
Yeah, but they didn't really have a running back that you can, you know, hang out on, that you have to respect
true.
As well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But also, again, this is a team with two impressive, if not stat sheet wiring tight ends, and Kyle Rudolph and the rookie Irv Smith. I mean, he's an Alabama tight end. They're usually pretty proficient unless they're completely broken down. But that's, again, another thing to kind of take in consideration. I mean, they've got yards coming from all corners on the offensive side. The storyline around this team is not what the stat box scores and stat lines suggest, is it, Adam?
No. It's going to be... I'm just watching Lamar Jackson run a touchdown against us, which was less fun.
Imagine being there.
Well, you didn't have to go. You could have shown solidarity with your podcast partner like I've done this week with you. Not really. But anyway, we digress. I'm just looking forward to it, and it's pissing me off that it's on Monday and so far away. There's so much of the weekend to go before it comes around.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the fact it's on Monday is not how far away it is what I keep going back to. I can't be doing with it. I mean, yeah, we'll get on to him in a bit with
That said, it's really annoying. We don't get a lot of them, but the 10 a.m. or 6 p.m. games on a Sunday, it's annoying because... like, that's like peak red zone time, and I missed out on all the fun in the other games, I felt like, because I had just had the TV watching on the Seahawks. No, but
yeah,
at the time,
we got one in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I don't like it. I like playing in the afternoon slot on a Sunday, so I can kind of do my red zone, then watch the Seahawks play. That's the ideal scenario for me. So, Rog, if you're listening, that's what I'd like you to do from now on. Thank you.
Yeah, but also at the same point, I mean, people were moaning that the Sunday night game they flexed us out for, and the Packers Niners was a blowout. I'm quite happy I didn't watch that game at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you know that, but the Niners are actually not good. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah. They missed 4,000 kicks and they're not good anymore. Kyler Murray is, though, very, very good. But anyway, the Minnesota Vikings, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, the two tight ends, Dalvin Cook, but Kirk Cousins, Adam, even after even though he did win in Dallas, I mean, Josh Allen's winning in Dallas, so maybe that doesn't say everything. This would be the big win after the big win, if that makes sense, wouldn't it?
Probably the biggest win of his career, which says a lot both ways, I would say.
Yeah.
And if anything would give you the hope that maybe you can go in there and, you know, just knock the guy's block off, to be honest. He was pretty shaky in the same game last year, which was also prime time.
Yes.
I mean, the big issue we've got is the uniforms. And you'd have to think it's going to be very difficult to get a win.
I mean, we're
looking like half nuclear waste and half a real football team.
I mean, I am part of Action Green Gang, but wearing it with the blue is a call. I mean, I don't mind the Action Green. But with the blue, it's going to look absolutely ridiculous. But I'm sure the commentators won't mention it. They'll probably talk about something else, which has no relevance to what's going on the field. But
Debo Samuel, I imagine.
Debo, yeah. Going on defensively, Adam. Again, this is a defense which doesn't give up a lot of points. It seems pretty consistent in the yards it gives up, but they have some gnarly characters outside of the ball. They've got two players who have got over 7 sacks. They've got Anthony Barr, who's kind of had a rebound year after a rough couple of years. Eric Kendricks is just always at the ball. And then you've got Xavier Rhodes, who, despite being abused by the boy Cortland, is still in the upper echelon of cornerbacks in the league, isn't it? It's a gnarly proposition on the other side of the ball as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would not be a surprise to me. Like, it would be like, wow, interesting. But it wouldn't stun me beyond the realms of possibility that the Vikings represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Oof. That's a shout. I'm going to clip that point when they lose by 42 on Monday. And
look,
that.
I'm not saying it will happen, but there's enough talent in the roster.
They
are one of the teams that you should have in your reckoning for, you know, winning the NFC, I think. One of maybe four teams. I think they're a much more complete team, than the Packers.
Yeah. The thing the Packers have got is that a team, if we win on Monday, a team is going to have to go into Green Bay. That's the biggest thing they've got going for their running for January. The Cowboys are clearly have issues, which I don't think is an on-field product kind of thing. I think you kind of have your owner coming out every week and talking how he's talking about the head coach and expect the players to continue to play to a sustainable, acceptable level, which is clearly, I think, what's happening there as we speak. But yeah, I mean, I think this sounds stupid because they're in the playoffs, but I think all six teams in the NFC who are probably going to represent the NFC in the playoffs, they would not be surprised if anyone made the Super Bowl. But when the AFC, it's kind of like three teams, maybe four, Adam?
In the AFC, there's one team.
I mean,
we're so off track here. I think the Ravens are leagues above currently what the others in the AFC or NFC are coughing up. Now, it's these seasons have shifts and shifts and shifts, and it might be that in the middle of January that's not the case anymore. But right now, the Ravens are considerably the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. But it's Bill Belichick, so who knows what he can cook up. Vikings defense. You've talked about how Cortland Sutton abused Xavier Rhodes. DK Metcalf is a similar body makeup to him, if not with his sea legs under him, as Cortland Sutton does as at this point. How do you see this team attacking the Vikings on Sunday? Again, the defense, which has only given up 3 rushing touchdowns to just 10 passing touchdowns, they don't give up many six-pointers, do they?
No, but I imagine it's going to be, you know, your typical Seahawk kind of waste the first quarter in the nicest way possible. Get rid of the first quarter, grind them down a bit, and then try and get the play action involved. And I know that's kind of the anti-analytic way to do anything, but it's working for them so far. Like, you can't say it's not working. And like, the number of explosive plays that the Seahawks are running at the minute, I think, is as high as any other team in the league, give or take. So, you know, what they're doing is working, and you know, more for you if you think they should change it.
Yeah. For me, this game on Monday is like it sets the conversation for the final month of the season. I mean, as you say about the Ravens, there's a good chance that the Seahawks could be the number one NFC seed when we go to bed on Monday night, Tuesday morning. But if that happens, then the conversation is completely different and different, kind of like a different weight to it. And if they lose, it's kind of like, okay, that's kind of to to be expected to a certain extent. This is what the ceiling of the team is. But if they win, and then, yeah, it's, yeah, yeah, yeah. if they win on Monday, then it's legitimately time to kind of, it's not just like home risen kind of thing. This is a legitimate postseason threat, and they just continue to do the business in the late games. I mean, if they win on Monday night, it's the 48th regular season. They've won 47 regular season. They've won 47 games since 2012 in November to January. I mean, this is not an accident. I think we say it every year at this point. We kind of need to not just wipe out the first quarter of a game. We need to wipe out the first quarter of the season, because this is when this team kind of shows its mettle and shows its true form, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is Seahawks season. Now it's time to go, and we'll see where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. If the Seahawks are to win on Sunday on either side of the ball, who's the one that will could well come down to, Adam?
I think Clowney's going to need to be there, but I'm going to go with Bobby for kind of doing a hatchet job on Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I think both the quarterbacks. We saw they triple teamed a couple of times in the game last year in Seattle against Vikings. Stephon Diggs, they probably can't afford to do that even more with what we've seen from McDougal and Diggs back there. So I think Trey Flowers is going to have to win his one-on-ones, or whoever's got the one-on-one on every certain play, him or Shaq. I'll go with Trey, because obviously you think Shaq is skyrocketing up cornerback ranks in the league with what he's doing. He's second in the league with 13 pass breakups behind just Logan Ryan. So he is properly playing at a different level to what we probably expected to see from him after his first couple of years in the league. But anyway, yeah, Trey Flowers is the one on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball, it's just all going to come. It's probably Chris Carson. I think if Carson can carry on doing what he's done most games this season without the fumbling and find that end zone early and maybe even more than once, then the Seahawks are going to be in ridiculously good shape, I think, on Monday.
Yeah, I just want it to be Monday now. Sorry, Black American, for your Thanksgiving, but stuff that. Let's get to Monday.
prediction, score prediction.
Ooh, let's go. Frank Gore, the inconvenient truth, picks up a big first down. 27-21 Seattle.
I'm going to go, I put this in our pick-up thing, I can't remember what it was. I think I've got like 27-23. I think that's what I'm going to go. It's not going to, although that's what their score was on Sunday. That'd be weird if it did back-to-back weeks. I think the Seahawks going to edge one, but yeah, it's going to be fun for 85% of the facets involved on Monday. After that, the Seahawks then are back on primetime. I don't think it's been flexed. I don't know if you've seen anything, but they're back on primetime the week after against the Jared Goff-led LOL Angeles Rams.
It's not been flexed, and it can't be flexed from here on because it's part of the date whereby it can be.
Okay, so Sunday Night Football, which is a much more palatable experience than what we're probably going to live through on Monday. A spin in the bin, Adam?
Let's do it.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
And Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, as always, shoot over straight to you for your incumbent in the bin this week, or Thanksgiving week.
I was going to shoot over to you, actually, because I hadn't really got one in my head straight away. But let's have a quick think. In a way, he shouldn't be in the bin, because he really should have a statue of him built in Seattle. But, Les Snead,
just get in the bin, mate, because what have you done to that franchise? You've absolutely fucked it, mate. They are knackered forever. You've got about 325% of your salary cap in seven players, all of whom are shite. You've given up the decade's first round picks for Jalen Ramsey, who's going to leave anyway at the end of this year because he's looking around thinking, what the hell am I doing with you bastards? And you have absolutely done it in, mate. You were supposed to be, you had it all laid out, you know, oh, we're going to be the kings of the NFC West, the bullies. And after one half-decent year where you scored a field goal in the Super Bowl, you are back to being the worst team in the division already. And it's glorious. So Les Snead, get in the bin, but also, you know, raise a 12-man flag.
Thanks.
You're a Seahawk hero.
Yeah, put him next to Griffey on the corner of Edgar and Dave. It's properly incredible. I saw my mate who's a Rams fan earlier today and just complete dejection when I asked him, did you watch it on Monday? I mean, there's never been a more pointed question this season. It's just, I mean, like I said, it was so easy. It was literally, you blinked and it's 28-3 and it's just like, oh, okay. They didn't really have any comeback of it. It kind of just happened.
Oh, and speaking of which, Jalen Ramsey can also get in the bin for being an utter bell end and trying to be a hard lad when, hold me back. Just so funny. So funny.
But also, I know you're not a fan, but Marcus Peters standing on the opposite sideline and doing his celebration is the best. He is a front runner, but my Marcus Peters is a front runner. It is pretty class. It's so, so good. But yeah, the Rams are a complete abomination. Might get in thy bin. He's probably already in there. We'll probably put him in at this point. Like I said, Jerry Jones, what are you doing? You should have fired the coach about 2 years ago. I mean, Dak Prescott, he's probably up until, 3 hours ago, was in the MVP conversation. And you cannot go around. I mean, the fact the owner has a weekly radio spot is something. I mean, I know Schneider speaks most Sundays pregame to, I think it's 7:10 he speaks to. So that's different. But he's like, Schneider's doing Pete Paz. He's not actually saying anything. He's just doing his minutes and then getting out of there kind of thing. But Jerry Jones, every week there's something coming out of it. Just stop. You're completely derailing this team, which kind of looked like, even like 10 days ago, it looked a proper tough assignment for anyone who got them in the playoffs. But if they lost, I'm not actually watching the game. But if they lose this one, and the Eagles can kind of sort themselves out even slightly, that AFC East is an absolute garbage division. But it's going to be a garbage division, which could have the 2010 Seahawk NFC West 7-9 kind of thing, because they are just, they look like, oh, I don't know, but it all comes back. Everything that was going wrong with the Cowboys all comes back to their owner, Jerry Jones. It's never going to change. It's like the Redskins with Snyder. It's never going to change down there. It's never going to change there. It's probably not going to change in New York while Shermer Gettleman's the guy making decisions on free agency kind of things. It's just that division is in the gutter and it doesn't show any signs of clambering out. But yeah, Jerry Jones and GITB for just derailing the team, which was kind of sailing along pleasantly, and Dak Prescott was this and that, and Kellen Moore was 2019 Sean McVay, and just one interview completely derailed everything and kind of changed the conversation just necessarily, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, an impassioned plea from you. Well done, I'd love to see it.
All right, good week. But anyone else for the bin?
Anyone else for the bin? I've not heard a lot of Skip Bayless this week, so it's tricky to say.
Talking of ESPN, Paul Feinbaum, get in the bin. He's I know he works for the SEC, and that's where Alabama is, but the maneuvering that those few people, I mean, the College Game Day was just a joke on Saturday. It just, Alabama should not be seeded where they are. Their quarterback without Tua is not good. And but because they're Alabama, they get I mean, Utah should be in the college play. If they win on Saturday, then beat Oregon in the Pac-12, they have to be in the playoffs. But they won't be because Alabama would have played Central Hawaii and beaten by 72 points. It's just, Paul Feinbaum and anyone who's kind of maneuvering things for Alabama to get in the playoff, because they are going to get in the playoff, because that's just how it goes. But, yeah, it's a joke.
Speaking of college football, get in the bin, Washington Huskies, because you're just an embarrassment, lads.
It's awful.
And that's about it. But really.
If you want to hear more about the Huskies, it is Apple Cup Week. We spoke to Theo Lawson, our pal who we met last year over in London, and we talked from Huskies, Mike Leach, Tyler Helinski, and ended the conversation on them, as all conversations should end, talking about Darren Huckabee. That's all our conversation should end, and that's how it's ended. That it should be, hopefully. It doesn't appear to be on iTunes for some reason, but it is on the Podbean feed, and it is on the Spotify feed for the podcast as well. So go check it out before the game kicks off at 9 p.m. UK time, which is somewhat palatable if you want to watch the Huskies on offense and the Cougs on defense, Adam.
That first time ever that game's been kind of at a viewable time, so that's quite good to see.
Good week, bad week.
You go for it.
Bad week, Booger. It's 45 minutes. Booger for like multiple things. The LA Rams were driving as much as they can with Jared Goff at quarterback on Monday, and they got to about the 12, maybe even closer than that, and had a false start. And Booger, without skipping a beat, his words were, "That's a good thing for the Rams. They now have more room." So remember that. But we've had people for 3.5 years complain about Jermaine Ifedi, but really, in Booger McFarland's eyes, Jermaine Ifedi is a genius. He's given his team more room to score. It's the stupidest thing. And then it was literally, I think the next time he had a talking head of where they have the camera in the booth, he was talking about everyone who said Lamar Jackson should have played wide receiver, they're being owned and all this stuff. And then within like 90 seconds, someone on Twitter, because some people are the best on social media, found an actual tweet, not like a quote from him, or not like this is what he meant, an actual tweet from Booger McFarland saying, if anyone knows anything, Lamar Jackson should play wide receiver in the NFL and he should give up on a quarterback. You absolute boob. And I don't want to listen to him for 3.5 hours on Monday.
But you do, and you're going to listen to it, and you're going to write everything down that you hear, and it's going to be great.
I am. Next week's podcast is going to be must listen. But yeah, you can. We've heard different broadcasts. I think I know you're not a massive fan, but I think Burkhart and Charles Davis is one of the best ones out there.
They were
pretty good on Sunday. Obviously, you got Romo and Nance. Romo, the bit up the first half I watched of the Cowboys game was just ridiculously. I mean, he was calling out why Sean McDermott's calling timeouts on 3rd and 3. It was just ridiculous. But at the complete other end of it is those two and Shouty Man. I mean, have they got any two? What names is he going to shout on Monday, Adam?
He likes.
What nicknames is he going to give?
Stefan Diggs could work quite well.
yeah, streaky Stefan.
Yeah, that could work quite well.
I don't think the ball had passed the plane and he got out. It's a Jackson 5 on Monday. They're the worst. For anyone listening who actually quite enjoys them, then I apologise, but it's going to be the same next week. Good week, bad week for you?
Bad week for Mike Pereira.
I mean,
there's going into bat for your guys, but I'm not sure if you heard it, but when he was trying to support the tripping calls that were given against the Patriots, and he was like, you can't lift your leg when you're blocking. It's like, okay, well, how are you supposed to move if you can't lift your leg? Lifting your leg is a crucial component of moving. So what is one supposed to do without one and the other? So that was not the best from Mikey P. I think that was roundly seen as his worst moment in the booth so far.
Yeah, but also, was it by the time Dallas got back to Dallas, the NFL had apologized for getting the wrong call on both?
I mean, there were three.
Two occasions.
There were three tripping calls last week, one against Joey Hunt, I think, and there have been four now in total for the whole season. So it's clear they're just telling these refs to look at, you know, look at one thing per week, and it's such bollocks, mate. I mean, they act as if we're there to watch the referees, and it's just, in both big sports that I follow, it is just so infuriating. Anyway.
Yeah, good week for me. Maybe I shouldn't say this with Apple Cup week, but the Washington State Cougars, for everything they did on Saturday, honouring Tyler Helinski on senior night. Kim, Mark, Tyler's parents and his aunt were out there, and while I was trying to find a feed, I actually managed to stumble upon our friend Jessamine McIntyre's radio stuff, and I think our friend was blubbing somewhat when they were honouring Tyler. Mike Leach, give both parents a big hug in the most Mike Leach way possible. It's a really weird shoulder tap at the end of it. It's quite strange. And then all the players come out with Helinski's shirt. I think a Coug fan who took the Tyler 3 in the Coug colours all the way around College Game Day last year is at Pullman. That was given to the family. So everything the Washington State Cougars set up and did for the most ridiculous family on Saturday is worthy of having a good week on this niche podcast, Adam.
I couldn't agree more, and it was a lovely gesture all round.
Yeah. Anyone, good week for you?
Good week for Adam Nathan, as it happens. I got to spend a bit of time on Thursday afternoon with Cliff Averill. I was set up by some of the guys at 950KJR, who are mutual friends, and got to spend a couple of hours with him around London, and just the nicest guy. Gave him one of the UK Seahawk patches, which I think he put on Instagram with a bit of UK Seahawk love, and exactly the guy that is showing up currently on the screen on Sky Sports now as just a really good bloke, and it was a pleasure to show him around, and he'll be back again soon, hopefully, and he's always welcome in the country, and I think he's going to be on the podcast at some point, which would be cool, and that was a surreal but good week for yours truly.
And there's no ulterior motives to that, no?
In what sense?
You said why you were rubbing it in my face.
Well, exactly. I mean, look, to pull back the curtain, Stuart sent me an awful lot of pictures when he was in Baltimore with certain people that I would have very much liked to hang out with, you know, throughout the week. And so I had to get my own back. And so the only way to do that was to spend a bit of time with 56. So yeah, I got my own back a little bit.
Yeah, a Super Bowl winner or Kev Clutter. I think you probably may win that one. As fun as Kev is and was on that Friday night, it is no, he hasn't won, to my knowledge, has not won a Super Bowl for our Seahawks. A few other things. We are still doing the Super Bowl meet, which could be hella interesting if things continue the way one of the timelines may well suggest in Birmingham at O'Neill's. We do urge, if anyone else in other areas of the British Isles or over in Ireland want to do the same, they can. A couple weeks for the Carolina Panthers game, Kieran Byrne is hosting the third or fourth time this season a viewing party at a pub in his town of Newark in Nottinghamshire. I'm going to try and get over there and watch the game in what seems a pretty cool spot. And also that same night, there is the now annual meet-up in Glasgow organised by Mr. Gordon Curry, and all the information on that is on our Twitter, is on our Facebook, and everything else. I think that is everything, isn't it, Adam?
I think so. I think it's time for bed.
So thanks for listening. You can, all the usual means and methods. We're going to try and figure out what is going wrong with iTunes, which that's probably not going to happen because we are quite dumb when it comes to that kind of part of the podcast production side of it. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
They all want to play. They all deserve to play. It's just sometimes it just doesn't happen, and it's how you deal with it. What he did is he got better. He's trimmer. He's faster. I mean, look how fast he looked today. He looked like he was shot out of a cannon. And that's because of the hard work. He got a little bit of fresh legs and benefit. He took full advantage of it.